And good morning. Welcome to the Great Days Outdoors radio show, where we bring you fishing reports from all over the state of Alabama. And speaking of those fishing reports, we've got Mike Thompson on the line. And speaking of hot, Mike, is there any hot fishing going on?
Well, redfish is always hot, it seems like. I mean, you can count on them. They're catching redfish all up in the Mobile Delta. They're catching them in the shallow water bays that have the grass beds. The best technique is to take your live shrimp under a popping cork and throw a foot or so from the grass edge, pop your cork, and hang on, because if there's any redfish in the area, they're going to sink it for you.
Mike,
they're not doing so well on the specs. The specs hadn't really moved up. They're still out below the old causeway, which is typical for this time of year because we haven't had any fronts. We haven't had any cool weather. It's going to take not one but two cold fronts to push through before we get a bounce on that speckled trout fishing.
Mike, speaking on those redfish a little bit, you know, we talk a lot on here about a popping cork setup with some type of a shrimp imitation. Do you find that you need some scent to be consistent on redfish, or can you get by with just a true artificial shrimp with no scent?
Well, you can get by with it, but it never hurts. You know, I used to fish with an old timer, and he would put scent on every lure he had. It didn't matter if it was a shrimp, a mirror lure, whatever. And he put menhaden oil on his baits, and he said he felt like that as when he was moving that bait, that little bits of that oil were drizzling off of his bait and leaving a scent trail.
Mm-hmm.
And now his boat stunk to high heavens from that stuff, but he caught a lot of fish. So, yeah, you can always at least bring your confidence level up when you've got a scented bait when you're fishing for redfish.
It makes sense. Well, I saw a beautiful picture of you online this week, Mike. And by beautiful, I mean the crab that you were holding. What is the talking about you.
the crabs are really strong right now. And I got a hold of some huge male crabs from a crabber. And I talked with him for a little while, and I said, you know, the crabbers I talked to last week said they lost a lot of crabs around that Jubilee. And he goes, well, I don't, you know, get that far up and that far to the east. He said, but I'm still losing about 10 to 15% of my crabs in my trap, you know, which is unusual to have dead crabs in your trap. But I said, well, look, man, I said, you're out there checking all these traps. I said, what about the triple tail? You seeing them? He goes, oh, man. He said, I saw a big one the other day. He said, it must have been 15 pounds. And he said, you know, I just took my scoop net, and he was so still until I got the net out. And then he took off on
me.
He said, but I'd have loved to have scooped that baby up. But he said he's seeing quite a few triple tails around the crab floats, plus the floating debris that came down from all the rain a week ago.
Right. Yeah, that's, you know, if you've got a boat with a tower, they can be beneficial when you're fishing those crab traps and running those lines. It allows you to stay away from them enough, and you can, you know, get up above and see if there's a fish there. It allows you to see a little further down in the water too. But usually, what I've seen with those crab trap pots is they'll pretty much hang right underneath that ball. Very rarely do you see them hanging down deeper than that, where like they would on, say, a pylon or something like that. Well, that's good to hear. I'm glad to know that there's some fish in the area. What else is going on in the upper part of the bay?
All right. Well, we're just getting on the edge of when you can go out into the bay and catch your speckled trout under popping cork with live shrimp or a voodoo or a DOA, something like that, a shrimp imitation. Talked to some guys that caught some really nice trout under some birds, and they would only define the location as being north of Dog River. So that's usually where they show up, because there's a lot of shrimpers out there right now catching a lot of shrimp, and when those shrimp get in the shallows, those fish, you know, surround them, and then the birds see them. So it's just getting ready to get started, and you'll catch a lot of the smaller fish in the beginning. But like I said, we get us a couple of good cold fronts, and it's going to come on. It's going to be a shock when it comes, because it's been so dadgum hot.
Yeah.
But you get two of them, and things are going to change, and there'll be some really good speckled trout fishing getting started.
Well, I was talking with David Thornton yesterday, and he was giving me a report from the Gulf State Park Pier, and he said they're starting to catch some flounder off the pier, which is a good sign. You know, that's kind of a good indication of some fall patterns starting to arrive. What about the flounder situation? Have any of those fish started to show up?
Yes, indeed. One of my good friends, David Hare, caught some really nice flounders over the weekend, and he said that some of them were over 3 pounds, and he's strictly a grubber.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd kill me if I told you where he caught them, but he probably won't be concerned. He was catching them on the baby bass, the little Zoom fluke bait.
Okay.
And that's a green back with a white belly. And he had some really nice flounders. He caught four or six on grub. So imagine if you worked an area with some bull minnows, what you could do. So yeah, flounder are showing up. Caught a couple of scattered reds. Caught a couple of scattered white trout. You know, but I tell you, Joe, it's been so hot, and we talk about it every week how hot it is. Even the bait camps say, you know, nobody's really going out there because of the misery index.
Yeah.
But we hang on. We'll get there.
Yeah, it's coming. It's coming for sure. Well, thanks, Mike. Thanks for that report. And if you make it out there, stay cool.
All right. See you.
All right. We're going to travel up to Pickwick Lake and talk with Captain Brad Whitehead. Brad, it's been pretty wet down here, man. What's going on up there?
Hey, we are not complaining. You know, I guess when you get around a lot of outdoorsmen, there's always, you know, it's too hot, it's too cold, it's too wet. Well, nobody up here, none of the fishermen are complaining about the rain because we know what's coming after these fronts go through and dump some rain. So we're excited for the next couple of weeks. We know what's fixing to happen up here.
Well, you've piqued my interest. How do these big rains affect Pickwick Lake?
Well, with us being on a river system, you know, a lot of guys don't understand how this works, and it's really simple, but it took me several years to figure it out. The live bait, you know, what these bass and crappie are feeding on, they're filter feeders, and basically what that means is they feed on plankton and stuff throughout the water. Well, what happened is over the past couple of months, we've had no rain. So the water's been real stagnant, and now we're going from running about 30,000, 35,000 CFCs through the dam. So basically that's generated water, and we're going to be up to about 100,000.
Wow.
That's going to move a lot of water around. It's going to move a lot of bait. It's going to move a lot of crawfish, plankton. That whole water system's fixing to turn over, and that's usually a feeding bell. You know, the bell will start ringing up here for the fish to turn on.
Well, I'm not the mathematician in any group, but even I can do that math. You know, 35,000 to 100,000. That means you got three times the bait. You know, three times the plankton in the water, which means ought to mean three times the bait, which ought to mean the fish are going to start biting. And as we go into the fall, I know the smallmouth fishing is going to pick up. Is that right?
No doubt. We, you know, everything as far as our bass, you know, smallmouth, even down to our catfish, all that revolves around the water flow. When the water is turned on and we've got generated water, you know, you might have water for the first mile below that dam, but I'm talking 31 miles between dam and dam. We need enough to push it out, keep it rolling, and that makes the fishing good from one end of Pickwick to the other. So we're really looking forward to it. I'm anxious by maybe next week or the week after when we do our fishing report, it should be jam-packed full of information, you know, because it's really fixing to get good.
Right. Well, I guess, you know, with all the rain we've been having, I know you guys hadn't been able to get out as much. So this is not as much of a report as much as it is a forecast that this next week looks really good. And what do you think in terms of what are you going to be targeting? Are you going to be going after just a little of everything, or are you focusing in on one fish?
I've talked to actually several guys today, several guides, and, you know, we're looking to really get cranked up next week or the week after. And I feel like if we can get our temperatures low, we get these cooler nights, get the water temperature down a little low, that things are really going to crank up.
What temperature do you look for?
Well, we like it to be in the low 70s. You know, it really can't get too cool for live bait fishing.
Mm-hmm.
We normally do it up till about December, second week in December. But that's the reason it's just kind of hard to get bait that time of year. You know, we start slowing down doing a little hunting. But we're pumped up for it. I mean, it's fixing to get good. October, November is really good. Of course, crappie, same way with it. It moves the water around. It gets all the stagnant water out of the lake, and you know, it turns them on too. So we're looking forward to the next 2 months really getting after these fish.
All right, Brad. Well, good luck this week. I look forward to talking to you next week and getting a report and just seeing how it affects things. If folks want to get in contact with you and book a trip this fall to catch some of those big smallmouth y'all are known for, how can they do it?
No doubt. Then give me a call, 256-483-0834. And also check me out on Facebook. We post quite often there. And I'm already seeing the, I have several people call because of this fishing report. So I'm very excited about what's going on and looking forward to maybe helping some more folks out.
All right, folks. That's Brad Whitehead on Pickwick Lake. Thanks, Brad. Stay safe, buddy.
See you, bud.
Let's move on down the bay a little bit and talk to Captain Richard Rutland with Cold Blooded Fishing. Richard, what's been going on today?
Oh, nothing to it, man. Not on the bottom end of the bay today. We're fishing the top end. Kind of looks like we might be starting to see a little bit of a fall pattern start to happen.
Good. Yeah, y'all kind of following those shrimp? What's going on?
That's it. We've seen shrimp all morning. Place where we started, kind of just south of the causeway in the Mobile River, we were seeing shrimp flipping in shallow water all over the place, a bunch of mullet and pogies and whatnot. So there's tons of life. Just in general in the upper end of the bay, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Most of our fish came off of a popping cork and either a voodoo or a live shrimp, and then we got on a few fish on fishing some grubs, fishing some gulp on the bottom, like a chartreuse curly tail gulp.
Mm-hmm.
Did have one nice flounder, several real nice redfish today, and I think we tagged 6 or 7 trout over about 20 inches today, so it was a lot of fun.
Tell me about that tagging. What you're doing that with the C-Lab?
Yeah, it's a conjunction with the C-Lab and the CCA have started Tag Alabama, and the only species I'm tagging right now are trout and redfish. And basically, you pop a tag in them, put your a general location down, a date, and then a link. And it's really cool to see what happens. Actually, yesterday, while I was building rods, I got an email from the C-Lab talking about a recapture, and I think I tagged the fish in May of 2016, and he got recaptured last week and had grown, I think, 10 inches.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty cool, and it was only about 1.3 miles away from where I tagged him is where he got caught. So you can tell those redfish are homebodies, you know.
Yeah.
They don't really go too far.
Have you had any of the trout that you've tagged recaptured yet?
I sure have. I've actually recaptured one myself, which is pretty cool.
That is neat.
That was in Dog River last year, but those trout move around a lot. They're not as much as homebodies as the redfish are. They like to move around on whatever they're foraging on, but yeah, I've definitely had several of my trout get recaptured. I think about 6 or 7.
Well, Mike, just before you, Mike Thompson was telling us that the triple tail have been showing up as far as the crabbers he's been talking to. So there's been a good report of them. Have you been doing any black fishing?
Not so much this week. About 2 weeks ago, I was on a real good bite, and I am tagging those as well. That's kind of a closed, not open to the public deal that I'm doing for the blackfish. But yeah, they're definitely around. It's been some great ones caught in the past 2 or 3 weeks.
What do you like to use? We've always used a slip cork when we're fishing for triple tail. Do you have any tricks with how you rig for them?
Man, not really as far as tricks. I do use a slip cork rig, and I usually beef up my tackle a little bit. Instead of using like a 20-pound leader, I'll go up to a 30-pound. And I like using a live bait J-hook versus a small treble or something. Mm-hmm. Like that. That's got a little bit thicker gauge wire on it, wire hook, so that, you know, you're not straightening hooks out, especially when you're trying to pull them away from structure.
Right.
But my favorite way to do it is just to cover water. looking at crab trap buoys and trying to find things that are floating. And most of the time, I use a popping cork with a real short leader, about like a 10-inch leader. And the reason I do that is I've had so many of the fish, you roll that cork past them, and they want to try to chase the cork, and they never see your shrimp.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I started tying my shrimp on real short like that when I see them. And you roll that cork on by them, and then bam, they see your shrimp and usually can eat it.
Yeah, that's smart. And that's really smart. And I've noticed that too. A lot of times we'll have fish come out and look at our cork, you know, and they're not bothered by that. One thing I do that's a little different, I think, than a lot of people is a lot of folks like to hook their shrimp in the head like they would if they're fishing for speckled trout or something like that. And I actually hook mine in the tail and run the hook vertical and then come back around and hook it back into the body, so you hide the barb of that hook. And what that does is when you're fishing something like a pylon or a buoy chain or anything that's vertical, it allows that shrimp to drag across that piece of structure, and that hook won't get buried up in that pylon.
You gotta have a weedless presentation.
Yeah.
Like that. I saw some guys doing that a long time ago when I was a kid, bone fishing. That's mm-hmm. how we caught.
Yeah, it makes a big difference. You know, when you're fishing, and sometimes you got to get that thing right up next to the pylon, and it does make a big difference there. Well, Richard, thanks for that report, man. It looks like the fish are kind of moving up the bay. We're getting close to this fall pattern. We're going to go to a new contributor this week. We've got Scott Kennedy on the line, and Scott is going to be talking to us about something that is just growing in popularity so much, and we've had so much demand. And that's kayak fishing. So, Scott, welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going, Joe? How you doing, Alan?
We're doing good. Alan's out today, but so it's just me. You have to suffer through that. But
I think I can handle that.
Yeah. So Scott, talk to us a little bit about kayak fishing and what's been going on this week as far as that goes.
Yeah, man. You know, kayak fishing, it's a great way to get after some of these fish. Great to get after, you know, get after a lot of them that boats aren't able to get to. You can really push back in a lot of areas that you wouldn't think normally are fishable, and that kind of paid into what we did this week. You know, we took one short trip out to some of these tidal creeks along Mobile Bay and got after the redfish. And you know, the outside of the creeks, they were kind of slow. We were really able to push real far back in these creeks. They got, you know, real tight, places otherwise you wouldn't be able to hit in a boat or anything.
Right.
And that seemed to be where the best bite was this week, way, way deep in the creeks, and got on a lot of redfish. Just kind of being able to find that cleaner water seemed to be key this week.
Now, are you blind casting these fish, or are you able to sight cast these fish?
This time of year we're still a well-educated blind cast.
Okay.
We're not actually seeing the fish. We've got certain areas that these redfish seem to hold up a little bit more, like kind of looking for, you know, grass points that stick out a little bit further, something to kind of create a little bit of an eddy in the water.
Right.
And so we're casting at that. Usually you can tell if there's going to be a fish there. You're not actually seeing the fish, though. That's usually... Once the water cleans up, usually by November, we're able to actually, you know, truly sight cast them.
Well, in addition to the inshore opportunities with kayaks, I understand that you'll go offshore as well. Tell me a little bit about what kind of offshore kayak fishing you've been doing this week.
Oh, yeah. The offshore is really kicking off. I've been headed a little further east, kind of towards Pensacola Beach this week. You can find a little deeper water over there, but it's been good. You know, been catching a lot of king mackerel, a lot of Spanish mackerel, a lot of bonita, you know, the little tunies. Those are always fun to catch. And, this time of year, they really push real tight to the beach. Like one of the kings I caught, you know, is just shy of 20 pounds. And I wasn't, you know, any further than maybe a half mile off the beach. Just trolling cigar minnows. And yeah, it's really good time of year to fish for that.
Talk to me a little bit about how you troll with your kayak. I know you actually use a Hobie, which has the pedal drive, which I'm sure is nice because, you know, obviously it frees up your hands. How exactly do you do that? How far behind the kayak are you trolling? Are you trying to keep that cigar minnow skipping up on top, or are you using live cigar minnows?
You know, if I can get a hold of live cigar minnows, I'm going to use a live bait every time. It's been a couple of days this week that the bait's been hard to come by. So, you know, we bring just some frozen cigar minnows, and we usually put out just a traditional king duster rig right behind us. You know, I like to keep the bait a little bit closer to my kayak than most people. Usually when I'm trolling, I'm keeping my bait, you know, right there, 10 to 15 yards right behind my kayak. So real close.
Okay.
And, and we just, you know, if it seems like the calmer days when it's real bright and you got a lot of sunshine, we'll put a little half ounce sinker or something on the rig itself to just kind of get it down a little bit deeper. But overcast days like today and, you know, where you got a little bit of chop, keeping it right on the surface seems to be pretty good.
Well, good deal, Scott. Well, we're glad to have you on the show. Look forward to hearing from you some more in the future. Tell folks if they want to get in contact with you to learn a little bit more, where can they do that?
Certainly. If y'all want to check out, you know, just some videos of offshore kayak fishing or anything like that, you can go to YouTube. It's just youtube.com/kayakandkennedy. And actually just put up another offshore fishing video today. And that'll kind of give you an idea. If you're interested in going on a trip or anything, you can check out whistlingwaters.com. And that's got, you know, all of our guided trips and everything if you're interested in anything like that too.
All right. Thanks, Scott. Have a good weekend.
You too, Jeff.
All right, let's head on up to Miller's Ferry and talk with Joe Dunn with Dunn Sports. Joe, what's been going on this week? I know you did a little teal hunting. How'd that go?
It was great. Like I said, down in Gaydon, they got plenty of teal. They were everywhere. My shooting wasn't too good, but the teal, they cooperated real good.
I was invited to go on a dove hunt last week, and it was definitely a terrible shooting exposition by me. It was embarrassing, but so I know where you're coming from on that. What about the fishing up around Miller's Ferry? What's hot right now? Are we still in the same pattern with catfish?
Pretty much. We got, you know, we've got a little more rain up this way this past week, and that's what I was just checking on, water levels, and you know, below the dam we up around 10 foot higher than normal right now, and we're about, you know, but when you go up above the dam, that don't translate into about maybe 2 feet or a foot, you know. But I was checking the discharge schedule, and they're running everything wide open. So I'm assuming they probably got a couple of floodgates open too. So we'll be having plenty of current. The water, but still, though, the fishing will be good. You're just going to have to move a little bit now, like we had talked earlier, when you have a situation like this. It's going to push those catfish, and it's harder to deal with those jugs in that flowing water unless you check them, you know, pretty regularly, or they'll get away from you. But basically, you could do the same thing, and you could, if you're going tight line style, fish around the creek mouths and stuff like that, where they'll bunch up around behind some structure. And the same thing with the crappie. Crappie, they're going to either move to the mouths where they can get out of the current, or they're going to be getting behind something, you know, to ambush, you know, whatever's coming by, they won't eat, whether the big minnows or small shad. But, you know, the tight line method is probably going to be the best for the crappie, like I said, in behind that stuff. And inside those creek mouths, you can probably troll some too, obviously, right now. You know, get in some of that dead water where those fish will, you know, just inside the mouth, back and forth trolling, where you can, where they're going to be, you know, staged at, ambush some of that stuff out in the swifter water right now.
Well, Joe, I was talking with you last week about, you know, one of my favorite fish to eat is a small catfish fry, but I think maybe even more so than that is a brim. I like to eat whole fried brim. What about the brim fishing?
Miller's Ferry, for some reason, does not produce really, really big brim. I mean, you get some almost hand size, but not quite. You don't get the real big ones like they do on the Tom Bigby.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, that Tom Bigby has always produced the great big ones. Now, at Miller's Ferry, you can catch some bigger ones, but you have to fish below the dam.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Need a biologist to tell us what's the difference and why. Either they got so much to, so many, they overpopulate above. I don't know. But the ones below the dam fishing on the rock walls and stuff like that, when the water gets real, real slack, and some of the guys down there, they'll go up and down those rock walls with crickets and catch some real big bream down below the dam.
Well, it may be because all those catfish y'all got are eating them before they get...
I don't know. They love them too, that's for sure.
Well, what's been going on at Dunn Sports? We're not far from hunting season, and you know, I guess everybody by now is probably, well, there's probably a few people that are still waiting, but we've had some good rain. Our field's coming up pretty good. Are you hearing good things as far as deer season goes?
Yep. The only problem, like I said, a lot, depending on where you're at as far as what type of soil you got, some of the sandy land guys are okay. They're going at it. But some of the ones in your in the lower type, bottom type areas have had a rough time because of all the rain. You know, it's been too much rain. So you have to just pick and choose your days when you can go and work on patches. Because, like, I mean, today we had last night and day we had close to an inch and a half of rain right around here. So, you know, that's just too much. It'll bog the tractor down now.
Right.
So just have to pick and choose your days.
Yeah. Well, a little later in the show, we're going to be talking with Steve Long with the Quality Deer Management Association and just kind of talking a little bit about that. Joe, if folks want to get in touch with you at Dunn Sports, how do they do that?
Hey, just give us a call here at 334-636-0850. We'll be glad to help.
All right, Joe, thanks. All right, let's head on over to the other side of the state and talk with Tim Chandler on Lake Guntersville. Tim, what's been going on this week?
Oh, it's just been raining, and raining a lot.
How does that rain affect Guntersville?
Well, I mean, it'll this time of year, what we call frog fishing or rat fishing is pretty big. A lot of people come here just to experience that. That's throwing a little rubber frog type bait on top of the grass mats, and typically we get a lot of rain. It'll actually tear up the mats and make them what we call watery. It just usually the best mats are the ones that's got a lot of slime on it.
Okay.
And you can't see any water. If you get a lot of rain like we have, what'll happen is it'll beat that slime away, and mats are not nearly as good. Now, the fish won't leave. It's just the frog bite's just not as good once the slime goes away for some reason or another.
Do you have any tools of the trade when it comes to frog fishing in particular? What type of frogs do you like?
Oh, I mean, man, everybody makes such good frogs now. I mean, used to be the only one to throw was a snag proof, a frog, and now Spro makes a good frog. I mean, Booyah makes a good frog. There's just so many different frogs. Everybody's kind of tapped into that market, so it's really, what preference you have. Some people are brand loyal, so, I mean, they'll only throw this, only throw that, But to me, it's not so much about brand as it is about color.
Okay.
And they make 400 something different colors. I'm exaggerating a little bit, but they do make a lot of colors, probably somewhere around 30 to 40. And you really don't need but about three or four of them. And because if you're throwing a frog on top of the mat, fish is under the mat, and the grass mat's between the fish and the frog, and they really can't see the color anyway. What they see is a shadow. They see movement up there, and I always typically like to throw black. It's gonna cast a shadow better than any other color anyway. If we do throw white from time to time, and then the white's mainly to be able to see the frog way out there on the grass mat when you cast.
Right.
They even make frogs that's like half black, half white, or half black, half yellow. And the yellow and the white or whatever they put on it, that's for help you see it, way out there. Because the fish is going to come up and strike the frog. And the thing that a lot of people do, I see on my guide trips, and I always tell everybody, when one hits it, don't jerk.
Right, right.
He may not have it, feel him. Lower your rod tip down when he hits it. Take in the slack, and whenever you feel your line start even tighten up, that's when you jerk.
That's easier said than done, though, Tim. We see the same thing inshore saltwater fishing for speckled trout. When we're throwing top waters, is the I mean, you see that fish bite and the temptation is to set that hook immediately. And a lot of times you end up with three treble hooks coming back at you.
Yeah, that's right.
Pretty quick. What about, yep. I mean, now if those fish are only seeing the shadow of that frog and they're really not keyed in on necessarily the fact that it looks like a frog, are there any other topwater baits that you can use that don't necessarily look like a frog that work just as well?
Not so much on the grass mats, because, I mean, the way the frog's designed, you know, it's got a dual hook that comes out. They used to make some single ones, but, you know, the body of that frog kind of goes around the curvature of the hook, and it makes it weedless.
Right.
You know, there's not hardly anything else out there that can mimic that. You know, they, at one time, some companies were making something more in the lines of a spook type bait. You know, it's a little bit longer, you know, maybe 5-6 inches longer, but it's still the same concept. It's just longer. You know what I mean?
Right. Tim, what do you do once you've hooked that fish? Okay. And I would imagine immediately he's going to try to get back down in those weeds. What do you do to keep, because I mean, if he gets down in there, is there any way to get him out?
Yeah. You're going to have a stout rod. I mean, we're talking heavy action rod and 55 to 65 pound braid.
Okay.
And the thing to do a lot of times, you know, frog fishing, the excitement is in the bite. Because once you get the bite, and if you ever hook up with a fish, it ain't nothing but a bunch of work. Mm-hmm. You're having to drag him through that. He's not really going to fight.
Right.
He's going to be down in that grass so much, and you got to have something to winch him out. And that's when you start got to go to that heavy gear, a good stout rod to get him out. You know, when you hook one, I tell everybody, when you hook him, try to pull him up to the top. If you can get him up on top of that grass, then you can just slide him across. If he ain't in the water, he can't do nothing.
And in keeping with that in mind, I would imagine when you step up to that 50, 65-pound braid, you can just crank your drag all the way down. That way you've got as much torque as possible.
Yeah, we don't use drags. We crank it all the way down. There ain't no drag.
It's a spool. It's a spool, not a drag. Yeah.
That's correct.
Well, good deal, Tim. Sounds like the frog fishing is good on Gunnersville. Thanks for that report. If folks want to get in contact with you and see what it's all about, how can they do it?
Well, they can contact me two different ways. Well, actually three. You can look me up on Facebook for Tim Chandler's Pro Guide Service. You can go to my website at milldrillerfishing.com, or you can just call me at 256-655-8292.
All right, Tim. Thanks for the report. We'll talk to you soon.
Yes, sir.